Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. And this morning I'm talking with Wendell Affield, and his books are quite the meld of Minnesota's arts, culture, and history stories. Wendell Affield's first novel, Muddy Jungle Rivers, gave readers a raw firsthand account of his harrowing experiences in and after the Vietnam War. And now he's written two more books, the first two in a series he calls The Chicken House Chronicles, and he's here to talk about this new series. Good morning, Wendell.
Hi, Katie.
So why do you call this The Chicken House Chronicles? We'll start there and then we'll dive a little deeper.
Well, the stories are based on discoveries that I made in Chicken House. After my mother died in January of 2010, I was her probate administrator, and there was a lock on a chicken house. And for many years, we knew that there were things out there. In 1984, my grandmother had died, and my mother inherited her estate, and she had it shipped from Seattle, Washington, out to the farm up in Nebish.
Oh.
And it was first stored up in the haymow of the dairy barn. And in the early 90s, I believe it was, a straight line windstorm came through and blew the dairy barn over. And so all these treasures were moved from the blown down dairy barn into the chicken house. So they were kind of damaged then. And my mother put a padlock on the chicken house, and there it laid for the next 24 years. And once in a while, when we'd all gather up there for a family get-together, someone would suggest going out to visit the chicken house and explore it. And my mother would really go ballistic. She would get very angry and refused anyone to go out there. And it was kind of interesting. I study psychology quite a bit. And I was reading a book, Deborah Bray, I believe, is the author. She was writing about dissociative identity disorder. And she wrote that people never forget their past, but they will store those memories away in a distant spot and not go near them. And it was a kind of, to me, analogous to all the things that I discovered in a chicken house.
So what was out there when you went rooting around?
Oh, wow. Well, thousands of documents. Scrapbooks, diaries, letters, thousands of letters, wedding invitations. My grandmother was an avid newspaper clipper. In the old days, you didn't just read Google for the news. You'd go through the newspapers and you'd clip out articles that were important. I have two folders at home that are a couple inches thick, especially through the war years and the World War II years. And I've not really read all of them. My grandfather was a stockbroker on Wall Street, and so there was quite a few financial clippings also.
Huh.
Photographs, just so much. A lot of it was severely damaged from laying there over the decades. But we salvaged, my sister and I salvaged probably 90-95% of it. We also found our grandparents' urns tucked away in the chicken house.
I was reading on your blog, you found old mouse bones and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
When you were wading through,
yes,
things.
Yeah.
So you waded through all these rotting documents, mm-hmm, and found pictures and information about your family history that you had just didn't know, I suppose. You pieced together a lot of things. What was it like unearthing all of that information, kind of decoding it?
Well, it was, I don't know, I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
The first winter I went through it, I separated it by, I call them characters. I started scanning things, and I created a folder. I bought an oversized scanner, and I created a folder for each person. And so I started reading the letters and documents and scanning them and sorting them into the files. And as I went along, I sorted out a lot of things that weren't really relevant, because I knew then I was going to write the stories. And the more I wrote and the more I scanned, thank goodness I didn't throw anything away. Some things that I thought weren't relevant turned out to be once I learned more. Just an example would be my grandmother and my future mother and aunt were in Europe in the late 1930s. And my Aunt Polly was attending this school in Brussels, Belgium, and she befriended a Jewish girl, a German Jewish girl. Well, she'd started bringing her to the apartment where my grandmother had, and Mrs. Cohen was her, that was the mother's name. She got out of Germany, and then her husband and her son got out of Germany. But at that time, I didn't realize that this was really important information. Well, one of the things I found early on was a wedding invitation, a 1949 wedding invitation from a Greta Cohn, and I just tucked it away, not thinking anything of it. Well, then I discovered all these 1930s connections, and I realized, wow, they stayed in contact all those years.
Hmm.
So there were so many. That's just an example of many, many things that came together as I studied and learned more about our history.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's Wendell Affeld. He is a writer. He grew up in the Nebish area, and he's been learning about his family's history with the chance discovery of this treasure trove of documents and letters and all kinds of memorabilia that he found molding and rotting in a locked up, dilapidated chicken house. I have to say, once I started reading the Chronicles, I found them fascinating personally. There's just so many layers. It's not just your family's story, but it also sheds a light on American history, the progression of women in our country, the path of the American immigrant, and also the history of Northern Minnesota, and mental health. There's a light that shines on mental health. The first book in the series, Herman, it's called Herman, 1940s Lonely Heart Search, introduces the reader to your family by sharing the story of your stepfather's family, as well as his journey through World War II, and ultimately how he met your mom and your brother and two sisters?
Two brothers and a younger sister.
Four kids. Three boys and a girl. How did you decide that the first book would be about Herman?
Good question. I had written literally hundreds of pages, and I couldn't find the door I was looking for into the story. And I went back and started revisiting the original documents. And I was reading through these Lonely Hearts Club. They call them catalogs. They're little pamphlets and a couple of newspapers and just some pages printed out of women looking for husbands in the 1940s. Well, in a newspaper, name of it was Cupid's Columns, my mother's ad was there with her picture. And I realized that Herman made first contact. My mother was a very unreliable narrator. She always claimed that Herman's ad, that she answered Herman's ad. But in fact, she was the one that had the ad out there, and he responded to her. And I realized then, since he made first contact, this is really where the story had to begin.
Yeah.
So Tinder's not a new idea after all.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Well, and now you think nowadays, unless your kid has your codes for different places, you know, that you emailed somebody years ago, they may not ever find some of our communications that we have with people.
That'll be lost.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you start writing letters again and doing things
by hand.
Okay, so in the first book we learn about the Lonely Hearts Search, and in the back of that book there's actually images of these Cupid columns and different forms of...
Yes, I talked to my copyright attorney, and he said that these Lonely Hearts Club catalogs were public domain, and so I decided to publish the first full catalog. My stepfather, Herman, was discharged from the Army in October of 1945. And in December, he received the first one. And he had notes, women's addresses, in the margins of the catalog. And the reason, I guess, back up a moment, the reason I decided to put this catalog in there, some people that I know that are active in women's studies suggest that this could be something that would illuminate women's history.
Absolutely.
And the first person that really brought that to my attention was Susan Carroll Hauser. I showed those to, after Susan retired from BSU she formed this small writing group, and I was just honored to be part of it. And I brought these Lonely Hearts Club catalogs over to her house one day and showed them to her. And she was amazed by them. She didn't know that there was that platform for single people. And that fascinated me. But, you know, that this lady, so well educated, wasn't aware of them. And that she's the one that said, young women need to read these. This is a part of women's history. And so I thought, that's why I need to publish this book.
Mm-hmm. Great. And the second book is called Pawns, dives quite a bit deeper into your family's history. And every family has dysfunction, right?
Yes. We, yes.
Different levels of dysfunction. But if you don't say your family has dysfunction, then then there's a problem. We all have it at different levels. So it digs deep into there. And we're talking about post-traumatic stress from the war and a lot of different issues your mom was having that nowadays have a label that maybe didn't back then, such as even postpartum depression or seasonal affect disorder, not to mention other deeper things that she deals with and you kids have to deal with as well. I don't want to give too much away because I want readers to go read the book. But why did you call it Pawns?
Because I came to realize, well, first of all, I kind of like that title because we were all pawns. I came to realize that Herman and Barb were pawns just as much as we were. They came into...
Barb is his mom.
Yes, Barb is my mother.
And Herman is a stepfather.
They came into the marriage. Herman was a 43-year-old bachelor looking for a wife. He had looked for 4 years. He had searched for a wife before my mother came along. My mother was living in a homeless shelter in New York City when she met my stepfather, when she met Herman. And so they both needed... My mother's goal was to find a safe home for herself and her children. And she was obsessed with living on a farm. So this was a dream come true. And one quick layer of this is I discovered my grandmother, she was terrified that my grandmother was going to have her committed. In fact, in a letter that she wrote to Governor Dewey after my mother disappeared from New York City, my grandmother wrote the letter to Governor Dewey, and it starts out, "Dear Governor Dewey, please help us find our schizophrenic daughter and her 5 young children." Actually, there were only 4 of us. But it made me realize that my mother had to escape, because later on in the letter, my grandmother alludes to having her placed in a sanatorium at that time, and how with the welfare's help, my grandparents could take care of us so we wouldn't be in danger.
Yeah. Fascinating. So that's the second book.
Yes.
Pawns, it's called. And you're going to be at the Watermark Friday night with that book.
With that book.
And I know you mentioned that you want to encourage people to not only come and listen and look at the book and get the book and create a relationship with you. It's a fascinating story that I certainly want to keep reading. But you're encouraging people to bring a donation of a non-perishable food item to the Watermark.
Non-perishable food item for the food shelf. Yeah, I'm giving away the first book, Herman, free with the purchase of Pawns, the second book. And my wife and I have been active with the food shelf for quite a few years. It's such a necessary part of this community. Mm-hmm. People don't realize how many folks use the food shelf.
So bring a non-perishable food item to the Watermark. Talk to Wendell, get both books, and I want to ask you, what's next for you before we leave?
Well, I'm working on my next book. It's well under production. It's about 500-page manuscript already. I'm tightening it up and going back through the primary source documents and doing research. I do a lot of research, actually. Real quick, one of the things, my mother was committed to Fergus Falls State Hospital in 1960. It's been closed for many years. I was able to get her medical records and her commitment papers through the Minnesota Historical Society.
That's where they came from.
There are resources out there that are incredible.
I found it fascinating that in the book you mentioned the data said she was released and healed, although it never indicated what she was healed from.
And that's correct. And that was in 1960. And my grandmother alludes to her having schizophrenia and several different documents too. And I started studying schizophrenia, and this term kept popping up, borderline personality disorder. And my wife and I were flying down to Phoenix several years ago, and we were in Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport, and I was in this bookstore kiosk, and I saw this book, Borderline Personality Disorder Demystified, and I picked it up, and by the time we got landed in Phoenix, the margins were just scribbled full of notes. This is Barb. This is my mother. Well, borderline personality disorder wasn't actually a diagnosable disorder until 1980. And before then, people were often considered schizophrenic or some part on the spectrum of schizophrenia.
Primarily because there was not a delineation that they fit into. So they went under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Oh, fascinating.
I also want to mention, if you Google Wattpad.
W-A-T-T-P-A-D.
Just like it sounds, Wattpad. W-A-T-T-P-A-D. Chicken House Chronicles, European Sojourn. I have 14 stories on there published, and what they are, they're my grandmother's 1937-38 diaries that I transcribed, and they include the scrapbook pictures and documents from concerts and museums that they visited. It's just a lot of people find it fascinating.
I sure do. I think, what do they say, truth is stranger than fiction?
Yes.
And can pull you in even more? That's how I feel about your books, and I'm excited that you're writing and you keep writing. And I also want to mention you're doing some writing workshops with veterans, too.
I am. About a year ago, Dr. Peterson at the VA clinic in Bemidji invited me to facilitate a veterans writers group for veterans that struggle with PTSD or readjustment after deployments. And so we meet monthly. If you're interested in exploring that option, it's a private writing group, confidential. The participants don't have to share their work if they don't want to. The goal with it is people with PTSD have a collage of trauma memories bouncing around in their head. Well, once they're committed to paper, you start organizing these memories and you start making sense of them. So that's kind of where we go with that.
Great. Well, thanks, Wendell. That is Wendell Affield. He's written 3 books so far, and there are more on the way. Muddy Jungle Rivers, Herman.
And Ponds, The Farm, Nebish, Minnesota, the 1950s.
Yes. So, and then that sounds like the prequel is on its way to find out what happened in your mom's early life. So we're looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Thank Wendell. You, Wendell's going to be at the Watermark Friday night launching the book Ponds, and everybody is welcome to come. Bring a non-perishable food item, and good luck with everything.
Thank you, Katie.
You're welcome.